Welcome back to Get Psyched, brought to you by PsychSign. I'm your host, Arizu, and in today's episode, we're venturing into a critical yet often overlooked corner of mental health care, the intricate world of reproductive psychiatry. We're delighted to be joined by Dr. Kanan Barot. Dr. Barot is a third-year psychiatry resident at Tower Health Phoenixville Hospital with a passion for integrating reproductive health and mental health care. Dr. Barot, who educates medical students and residents, is on a path to specialize in reproductive psychiatry, a field that navigates the complex interplay between reproductive health and mental well-being. In this conversation, we'll uncover what draws an emerging psychiatrist like Dr. Barot to this specialty. We'll explore the challenges and innovations that shape reproductive psychiatry today, and Dr. Barot will share her insights on the future of the field, the research that excites her, and the holistic approaches she champions in her practice. But that's not all. We'll also dive into what it means to advocate for patients in a field that's as controversial as it is vital, and how Dr. Barot envisions her impact and legacy in repro psych. So whether you're a medical student pondering your specialty, a seasoned psychiatrist looking to expand your knowledge, or simply someone interested in the nexus of mental health and reproductive rights, this episode promises to enlighten, challenge, and inspire. Get psyched to delve deep into the world of reproductive psychiatry with Dr. Barot. Hi, Dr. Barot. So happy to have you today for the PsychSign podcast. I'm very excited to go ahead and ask you all these questions I've had on my mind for months about this very specialized and up-and-coming field of reproductive psychiatry. I'm very excited to have you, and we can just go ahead and get started. Could you please explain for our listeners what is reproductive psychiatry and its essential role within mental health care?
Sure. And I'm very happy to be here, Arizu. Thank you for having me. So reproductive psychiatry, it's also known as perinatal psychiatry and often referred to as women's mental health. But, you know, we want to be inclusive. And so we're calling it reproductive psychiatry. It's a subspecialty within psychiatry that focuses on the mental health needs of individuals during the reproductive years, especially during events in the reproductive years, such as pregnancy and the postpartum period. It also includes mood disorders like premenstrual dysphoric disorder, PMDD, which was previously called PMS, and as well as perimenopause-related mental health issues. So it addresses psychiatric disorders that may arise or be exacerbated during pregnancy, during childbirth, and during the postpartum period. And basically, reproductive psychiatrists, they diagnose, are involved with the prevention of mental health issues during the reproductive period and pregnancy and treatment of these mental health issues, as well as coordination of care with other specialists such as OB-GYNs and family practice docs. And it's very essential because of the impacts of mental health issues during the during pregnancy and postpartum period. It really affects pregnancy outcomes as well. So it's very important to treat these issues in the pregnant population.
Thank you so much for that very thorough response. That was amazing. I think that was all encompassing of, like, you know, perinatal reproductive psychiatry being a specialty that focuses not only on the, you know, pregnant, the duration of pregnancy and postpartum, but also things like PMDD, which are things that occur and arise with the fluctuations of the menstrual cycle. And I think it's so important that you touched on all aspects of perinatal or reproductive psychiatry. Very thorough. We appreciate that. I do have a few follow-up questions, just things that came up as you were speaking. It's very interesting that you mentioned that so many of these psychiatric or mental health disorders will impact the outcomes of women who are, you know, carrying children and experiencing mental health struggles. Can you elaborate a little bit on what some of those differences in outcomes look like?
Sure. So women who have mental health disorders during pregnancy, for example, depression, bipolar disorder, et cetera, have poorer outcomes in general as a result of their mental health issues. So, for example, untreated depression, untreated bipolar disorder in the perinatal population results in things like low birth weight, preterm labor, if they are taking medications, let's say, for example, psychotropic medications, they're known to increase weight, they're known to increase your HbA1c levels, they're known to increase your lipid levels. All those things kind of result in, for example, increased risk of gestational diabetes. So there are a lot of impacts of mental health issues in the pregnant population on both the pregnant individual, on the fetus, for example, and then the unborn child, as well as the pregnancy itself, right? So things like gestational diabetes, that sort of thing.
Right. And it sounds like, you know, this is a discipline that requires looking at various factors and various perspectives when it comes to all the different things that can affect the outcomes, right? You mentioned things like not only the mental illness itself and how that has an impact on the course of pregnancy and the outcomes for both the pregnant person as well as the unborn child, but also interactions of medications, impacts of medications directly on the body and metabolic states and things like that. So I think it's so important that, you know, you're bringing attention to an issue that people don't understand sometimes just how intertwined it is with all aspects of physical health and mental health and overall health. And so I'm really happy you're here and we're able to kind of dive a little deeper on this topic. So would you mind sharing your personal journey to psychiatry and what specifically drew you to reproductive psychiatry?
Sure. So I want to say initially before... So just to give some background, I went to medical school in India. I actually grew up in the United States. My family actually immigrated back to India when I was 16 years old, and then I went through medical school in India. And prior to beginning medical school, you know, the summer before medical school started, I thought that I really wanted to go into OB-GYN because I was very interested in women's health. During my rotations in medical school, I was drawn more towards psychiatry. I really enjoyed, you know, the process of diagnosis and the treatment of psychiatric disorders. And it was just such a fascinating field. And so I decided to pursue psychiatry as my interest in residency. And so, you know, I took my USMLE exams, moved to the United States to pursue my psychiatry residency. Currently, I'm in my third year of my residency program here in the United States. And I actually had no idea that there was something such as reproductive psychiatry and you know, when I started residency. So during our rotations in the crisis center, for example, in our first year of residency, we would have pregnant patients come in crisis, for example, feeling suicidal. They might present in mania. And I remember that after encountering these patients, they with these various psychiatric conditions, I realized how much careful consideration goes into treatment of both my patient and then looking into the well-being of their unborn child as well. And this kind of piqued my interest. And I actually quickly recognized my knowledge gap when treating this population, especially during my first year. And halfway through my first year of residency, I had the opportunity to join this newly founded Reproductive Psychiatry Trainees Interest Group. It was founded halfway through my first year of psychiatry. And I attended some of the presentations and the discussions within this group, and they were immensely beneficial in enhancing like my understanding of mental health challenges in this population. And so I've been an active member of that interest group. It's a trainees interest group. So there's lots of medical students and other residents who are interested in this topic. And I kind of recognize how it's this knowledge is important for all the residents. And so I took an initiative to develop a curriculum on reproductive psychiatry for my residency program to teach the other residents about mental health issues in this population and, you know, management, treatment, et cetera. And hence, you know, they would receive like this comprehensive training on this, on the management of mental health issues in this population. And I've also been teaching beyond just residents. I've been teaching Drexel medical students during their psychiatry clerkships about this topic as well. And so I find this topic really fascinating, and I really enjoy educating other medical professionals on this topic because there are a lot of beliefs and there's a lot of stigma around treating this population with medications, especially using medications in the pregnant population and the effects on the unborn. Everyone is concerned about the effects on the fetus. And so there's a real lack of knowledge around this topic and among medical professionals. And so educating medical professionals on this topic is a real interest of mine.
That's amazing. I really admire your, solution-minded approach to this situation, recognizing that there's a knowledge gap, whether it's in the residents or medical students even, or just generally in the medical professionals community, and then being action-minded and creating solution, whether it's, compiling resources, giving presentations. I think that's what's so amazing about, the world we live in today is that we have access to so much information that we're able to share, widely and in that sense, kind of make sure that we're all better versed in being able to provide treatment and care for all patients, no matter pregnant, not pregnant, and it's a huge population too, which is why, when I learned about reproductive psychiatry, I only really learned about it a year ago as well, through the Association of Women Psychiatrists, and then also through joining the group you mentioned, the Repro Psych Trainees Group. Only really learned about it about a year ago. And it kind of blew my mind how this wasn't even something that had occurred to me as an issue that, we should maybe take a closer look at until I learned about these groups and that there was even a specialty called reproductive psychiatry. And I felt a little embarrassed, like, wow, this is something I didn't even think about. And yet when I learned about it, it all kind of clicked, like, this is something that deserves so much attention. The need and demand for professionals that can give specialized care and attention to these patients is so the need is so high. And like you mentioned before, the knowledge gap is very, very real. And so I think as more people learn about reproductive psychiatry and also learn about the opportunities to learn about reproductive psychiatry, hopefully we'll be able to close that gap. But I really think it takes people like yourself, advocating for your patients, advocating to increase access to this information to really make a tangible difference in that space. So I really admire your work there. And I'm really interested to, dig a little deeper about, some of the things you do, both on the education front and also what you do potentially in your own care of your own patients, now that you're a third year resident. So I'm really curious to know, what, if you have a case you could potentially share, a complicated case that has influenced your approach to patient care, and maybe you could share that with us.
Sure. But I'd like to go back to what you said initially about, providing other healthcare providers with information from which they can educate themselves. I feel like just by talking about reproductive psychiatry, it really stimulates everyone's mind to start thinking in that direction, to start thinking that mental health issues need to be treated in the reproductive population. And even if I could just do that by talking about these topics, I think it's, it's a job well done where other healthcare providers will give mental health issues and the importance and the place it, importance and treatment that it deserves. In terms of a complex case, I feel like there's one case that I've really learned a lot from, and I'm going to change the demographics when I talk about this patient. There's a patient that I was seeing with the diagnosis of schizoaffective disorder in her early 40s and with unmanaged mood episodes of mania, episodes of depression, along with some, baseline psychosis. And so when she had initially presented to me and I did her intake, she was already on lamotrigine, not doing well with on the lamotrigine. And, I took an in-depth kind of medical sexual history and found out that, you know, she's only interested in female partners. She's had 3 miscarriages with IVF in the past. Currently, you know, she is not in a relationship. And when I asked about her plans about getting pregnant in the future, you know, she said that one day I would like to get pregnant. And so, you know, nowhere in the recent future, she did not tell me that she wanted to get pregnant in the recent future, but she said she wanted to get pregnant one day. And so when we started looking at treatment options, she was already on lamotrigine when she came to me from her PCP, and it wasn't working for her. Unknown whether it was not working for her because of medication non-adherence or, you know, what the issues were. She said that she was on one of the dopamine antagonists in the past, which also did not help. And so we decided to kind of consider valproate or lithium. But just, I had this feeling where, you know, she had told me that, you know, she wanted to get pregnant in the future. And I figured that this would be an individual where switching from valproate or lithium to something else during pregnancy would be a bit of a hassle, actually. So we decided to try like aripiprazole, especially with the history of medication non-adherence. Aripiprazole has a long-acting injectable, and if it worked, it would be great. We would not have to switch anything during her pregnancy. So after having this kind of in-depth discussion about plans of getting pregnant, we, you know, put her on aripiprazole. I was doing both medication management and therapy for this patient. So I was seeing this patient every week. And about 4 to 5 months into treatment with a partial response to aripiprazole, unknown whether it was because of the aripiprazole or non-adherence to the aripiprazole, about 4 or 5 months into treatment, she, you know, it tells me that she is 6 weeks pregnant. And it turns out that she was receiving IVF. And during therapy, we kind of unpacked why she felt like it would have been uncomfortable to tell me, to share with me her plans about getting pregnant. But it really got me thinking about how it was a good decision on my part not to put her on the Depakote or the lithium. And in the future, and although like I did take in-depth reproductive and sexual history, it really got me thinking that in the future, I should be explaining to my patients why I'm taking this history and why it's important for us to work together, especially during plans of getting pregnant, during pregnancy, and why it's so important. I feel like if I had explained to her better about the importance of working together with your mental health professional when planning to get pregnant, this could have gone maybe another way. And so I think that was one of the things I learned. Another thing that was important in this case was just, it kind of just reinforced how important it is to take a reproductive and sexual history for all of your patients and keep in mind what their plans are about getting pregnant in the future. The third thing that I learned from this case is that all patients, whether or not they are currently pregnant or planning to get pregnant, all patients should be considered at a risk of getting pregnant, especially if, you know, they have female reproductive organs and they are within the reproductive age group. Planning for pregnancy should start from way beforehand. So for example, if I'm seeing a female patient maybe in her early 20s that has no plans of getting pregnant in the recent future, I will still consider which medications are good for pregnancy beforehand so that we have less grief in switching the patient off of, for example, Depakote or something like that. So that's always, you know, something to keep in mind, that if you have an individual with female reproductive organs in the reproductive age group, there is a chance that they will be pregnant. It is always good to document contraception. It's always good to plan with the patient. And it's always good to keep that in mind, despite your patient's telling you that, you know, I don't have any plans of getting pregnant. There's always a chance that they can get pregnant. So that's always important to keep in mind.
That's completely true. And there's so much knowledge that you just flexed on us. I just want to unpack this a little bit. That example, that case that you explained to us, that example was so powerful because this was a patient who, you know, you took a thorough reproductive and sexual history. You know, you're asking all the right questions, but the patient communicates to you that they have plans of getting pregnant in the future, and they don't explain
how far into the future they're looking to get pregnant or hoping to get pregnant. And, you know, that can mean anywhere from, you know, I'm trying to get pregnant ASAP to I'm trying to get pregnant, you know, in the next 3-4 years, right? And so the fact that you had the foresight to kind of consider her goals, you know, into your decision-making process, that is a really powerful testament to just how important, you know, asking the right questions are, just even asking the right questions, and then taking that next step to explain why you're asking those questions and what are the potential repercussions if, you know, they're not maybe not completely forthright or transparent with you. And I can completely understand why some patients might not be so forthright with, yeah, I'm actually seeking IVF treatment, or I'm actually trying to get pregnant right now. You know, those are very personal decisions that one might not feel inclined to, you know, convey to their psychiatrist unless they maybe understand why those pieces of information are so important to your clinical decision-making process as a psychiatrist, right? If we as providers don't fully understand the interplay between mental and reproductive health, very difficult for us to expect our own patients to understand that and come forth, be forthright with that information. So I think the lessons you highlighted from that example are so, so important that, you know, take the time to ask those questions, take the time to explain why you're asking those questions. And then that patient education piece is so, so important, no matter what we're explaining, just what, you know, why you're picking one medication over the other. Maybe, like you said, you don't want to have to switch medications 2 months into pregnancy, and maybe the damage has been done or something. Or, you know, switching a patient off a medication and they have a remission into psychosis or mania. Those are very, very important medically critical decisions to make on your part. And I just really love that example that you provided.
One of the things that's very important to consider, especially as you're making these decisions around medication management, especially for people with mental health issues, is that people with mental health issues are maybe, as a result of their condition, maybe more impulsive. There might be something else going on for which they're not forthcoming with some of their decision-making processes. There might also be, for example, if someone has bipolar disorder, there might also be an aspect of mania going on where the impulsivity is so much where it's difficult for them to kind of manage themselves in a way that the average population might be able to. So for example, if they're experiencing, you know, an episode of mania, it might be that, you know, they are partaking in risky sexual behavior, have an increased risk of becoming pregnant. And so it's always important to keep that in mind, especially when you're treating the reproductive age group as providers.
That's totally valid. And that just, again, is a testament to how complicated the interplay is and why you need to be so thoughtful and mindful about the questions you ask and how you ask them, because you're completely right. It's not even a matter of someone being intentional about getting pregnant. There are so many instances of, you know, accidental pregnancy where maybe it was a result of maybe an episode of mania or related to that heightened level of impulsivity that can come with certain mental health diagnoses. So that's so, so important to highlight. I'm really glad you highlighted that. It's just a testament to, you know, how much, you know, we don't consider these things sometimes. Like I'm on my psych rotation right now and I'm working in an inpatient unit, and I can tell you maybe this has come up maybe once or twice. It's not been something we discuss regularly. And although it's something I would like to discuss, it's not something that the providers are very well versed in. And so, unfortunately, it's not something they can provide good management or, you know, oversight on. And so it's something I think needs a lot more attention. And I'm glad you're able to break it down like that, because you were able to really explain to me and all of our listeners today how you approach a case like that, all the different avenues it opens up in terms of how do we change our the way we communicate with patients? How do we change the way we educate patients? You just opened up all those different avenues, and I think those are such a powerful example. And in speaking on that, I think that, you know, research and ongoing research in this field is so important, especially as more and more people learn about ReproPsych. I think that research is going to play a huge role. Could you explain what that role in research is, and as well as highlight some examples of innovative research or treatments out there?
Sure, sure. Like you said, research is very important, especially in the reproductive age group. As we all know, pregnant and lactating individuals are frequently excluded from randomized controlled trials. And those type of studies are the best way to do a lot of research. And so even when studies are done, it's very difficult to control for confounding variables, right? So for example, maternal bipolar disorder is itself a confounding variable when you're testing for whether this medication causes poor outcomes, low birth weight, structural abnormalities, et cetera, right? So maternal bipolar disorder itself is a confounding variable. And like I mentioned before, right, the glucose levels, the body weight, et cetera, can cause, you know, gestational diabetes. And so there are all these confounding variables that we can't even measure for. For example, maternal stress, environmental exposures, low income, non-adherence to OB-GYN visits. And so that really makes doing research very difficult in this population. So it's very important in reproductive psychiatry to control for these variables when you're doing research. And so since the pregnant and lactating population aren't included too frequently in randomized controlled trials, the next best thing are these new epidemiological studies that are currently being done with Medicaid and commercial insurance-based data. So there's one in particular that comes in mind. It was published in JAMA in October of 2022. It's Association of Antidepressant Use Disorder in Pregnancy with the Risk of Neurodevelopmental Disorders in Children. And so what's really amazing about these type of studies is that they're using Medicaid and, you know, commercial insurance-based data to get information for about like 5 million people in this study. And they really controlled for confounding variables. And it helps when you have such large data and you do the analysis in such a way that you are controlling for these variables, you really get a good amount of data on whether or not exposure to these medications, for example, in this case, neurodevelopmental disorders in children. There's another study, similar study, where they are measuring the association of antipsychotic use in pregnancy with the risk of neurodevelopmental disorders. So I feel like these sort of studies are necessary. They're a lot of work, but they really give us a lot of information about outcomes that everyone is so, you know, everyone is scared of having poor outcomes. And these studies really give us a lot of reassurance about that. In terms of latest and innovative treatments, the FDA has approved allopregnanolone analogs for treatment of postpartum depression. And I think that's very exciting. Allopregnanolone is a neurosteroid and it is a metabolite of progesterone. And it basically is a positive allosteric modulator of the GABA receptor. It's naturally present in the body because it's a metabolite of progesterone. And they're thinking that one of the ways that it might act is by acting on these receptors after delivery. And so after delivery, the levels of progesterone that have risen suddenly drop. And individuals who are sensitive to these hormone fluctuations might develop postpartum depression. And that's a theory. And so when these individuals are provided with these allopregnanolone analogs, for example, in the United States, there's brexanolone and zuranolone, which are, you know, IV and oral, it helps to kind of remit the depression faster than SSRIs would work, right? SSRIs would take 4 to 6 weeks for full effect, especially for someone who's never been on, if they're not on it during their pregnancy. And I think it's very exciting because the postpartum period is such a crucial period of time when individuals are spending time with their babies, they're bonding with their babies. The babies require a lot of care and attention. There's sleep disturbances going on. And I can't imagine like the difference in the quality of life that an individual have if their depression went into remission earlier versus 4 to 6 weeks later. So really just these GABA modulators are very interesting. And there's another one called sepranolone, which is currently being studied in Europe for treatment of PMDD, actually. And so I'm very excited to see how and when these agents are incorporated into, you know, in the general population will have access to these agents. I feel like it will lead to an increased quality of life for individuals suffering from postpartum depression.
Absolutely. I think all those treatments that you highlighted, those are very, very exciting. And we're really talking about the forefront of psychiatry here and the forefront of reproductive health here. And so to see that, you know, there are treatments actually being brought out to be used in the general public that actually have shown effectiveness in reducing things like postpartum depression, that is huge. That's something that is pervasive throughout the population. And so if there's something that has shown effectiveness to treat that, I think that is going to be a huge, a game changer and hopefully a catalyst for more research into further treatment for the whole array of disorders that we're talking about, and not just the postpartum depression. But I think that that is such a great place for us to be able to start because it tends to be, you know, so widespread amongst postpartum patients. And so, and something I think a lot of people can resonate with. I personally know so many people who have gone through postpartum depression. It's something that people feel maybe a little bit more comfortable talking about, at least in the general discourse. It seems to be a little bit more well understood. And so it's a great place to start. And I think it's very telling and exciting about where this field is going. So what strategies do you use to advocate for your patients and also increase awareness about the intersections between reproductive and mental health, and also increase awareness about some of these new treatments we've discussed?
Sure. So I feel like educating our patients themselves is very important. Regardless of whether my patient is, you know, of the reproductive age group, having reproductive organs, I enjoy educating my patients about, especially newly diagnosed patients, about their diagnosis, what life will look like with their diagnosis, what it means to have this diagnosis. And it's very exciting when I have someone in the reproductive age group who's newly diagnosed with a mental health condition. When we are having these discussions about their diagnosis, we also have a discussion about treatment options, safety in pregnancy, for example. Especially right now, since I'm a resident and I know I'm not going to be at this clinic forever, and I like to have these conversations with my patients so that when they are planning to get pregnant, they inform their future provider so that they know that, that it's important to continue taking their medications during pregnancy and so that they feel confident that we've chosen medications that are okay for when they get pregnant. And so educating my patients, I feel like, is the biggest step. We also talk about, for example, getting blood levels of medications once they are stable on their medications and they have not had a mood episode. We'll get blood levels and, you know, I will tell my patients, like, so this is a good blood level for you, it looks like. And when you are planning to get pregnant or when you are pregnant with your future provider, this is the blood level that your provider should aim for. And so my patients can be their own biggest advocates. And I think that's very important. Also, a lot of our patients, you know, they go and look for information on things that we don't talk to them when we don't talk to them about certain things, or even when we do, they love to go online to look for information on certain topics. Reddit is a favorite. And so I love to provide them with alternatives to this online education that's more backed with research. And it's, you know, the articles are written by mental health professionals or people in the medical field. And so in the case of my pregnant and lactating patients, I love referring them to mothertobaby.org as an excellent source of information. And hence, you know, it can satisfy their curiosity and it will kind of confirm that our conversations are, you know, they're on, you know, we're on the right track in terms of their treatment.
Yes. And I think that both pieces of that, of your strategy are so important, right? Educating your patients is not just so that they have that information just to have it. It's a form of empowering your patients to be able to be their own advocates. So I love that you highlighted that. And also that other piece of actually providing them with resources, or rather alternative resources to just the plethora of, you know, rabbit holes that people can go down on the internet, providing them with actually evidence-based resources that they can refer to. Is a wonderful idea. And I love that you highlighted that one particular example. As this field becomes more specialized, there are quite a few resources out there. But, you know, there are a few at the moment that are, you know, widely trusted, widely accepted within the medical and mental health communities. And so, you know, providing them with those, you know, well-respected and evidence-based resources is a crucial step in, and the next step for advocating for your patients, especially since, you know, I love that self-awareness of like, I'm a third year resident. I'm not going to be with these patients forever. I want them to have the tools to advocate for themselves even when I'm gone and they're moved on to the next provider, so that they can speak up for themselves and be aware of all the different things they need to be aware of, and not necessarily rely on the next provider who may or may not have the insight about these interactions. So I think that's a critical step. And very inspiring as well, because, you know, I love that you've taken it upon yourself to really educate your patients, even as a, you know, still in training and all of that. It really inspires all of us, no matter what level of training you are, to take ownership and accountability over your own education as a medical professional. You know, we're going to be lifelong learners, so it only makes sense that we, you know, utilize all of our own resources to become the better clinicians that we can be. How do you see the future of reproductive psychiatry evolving? And what advancements or changes to the field are you most looking forward to?
Yeah, I'm very excited about reproductive psychiatry. It's, you know, an up and coming field. And what's very exciting is that is the importance that women's mental health issues are being given nowadays. You know, women's mental health issues are giving the importance that they're due. It's been a long time in coming. And so this is a niche field where, you know, a lot more psychiatrists and OB-GYNs are interested in. And this interest has led to a lot of organizations being created. So, for example, ReproTox trainees is one of them. The NCRP, National Curriculum for Reproductive Psychiatry, has been created. And so this has led to a lot of opportunities for self-education for a lot of providers. And I think that's very exciting. Another thing that's happened recently is a publication of the textbook for women's reproductive mental health by the APA, which has been, I don't know if you've had a chance to look at that textbook, but it has been amazing. It's an amazing source of information. And so I'm very excited as this field evolves, as this interest in this field increases, I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing more resources. I'm seeing more opportunities, right? An increase in a number of fellowship programs. I'm looking forward to seeing more research as well, because I feel like research has been lacking in this field for a while because it's so difficult. And as we move forward, I'm looking forward to like a lower burden of mental health issues related to reproductive events in our patient population with the development of newer medications such as allopregnanolone analogs that we talked about. And then, you know, I'm very excited that our patients, I'm very hopeful that our patients will have a better journey during the pregnancy, the postpartum period, as well as other times in their life, for example, during perimenopause or, you know, during their menstrual cycle. And so I'm just excited for the burden of mental health issues being lowered in this population.
Absolutely. So much exciting stuff you touched on, and I completely agree. I think opportunities for, you know, more resources, more conferences, more fellowships, more, you know, the textbook you mentioned, I haven't actually taken a look at it, but it's a resource that I think has been long overdue in the making, something that medical professionals can actually reference as a, you know, standard, a gold standard for treating patients. I think it's well overdue in 2024 that we have something like that. So I'm excited by the fact that changes happening and happening rather quickly. And I hope the trajectory of that just grows and grows and grows. And I love that you touched on just, you know, eventually the burden across this population being reduced, you know, when it comes to things like perimenopause. I think that menopause in general is something we don't talk about nearly enough and affects half the population. And so it's something that, you know, is overlooked even in the context of reproductive psychiatry. We tend to think about reproductive age people rather than looking at the full scope of what, how, you know, reproduction and things like that overall affect our health along the trajectory of our lives over the full course of our lifespan. So I'm excited to see those things as well. And I'm curious, what are your own personal long-term goals in reproductive psychiatry?
Yeah, in terms of my personal goals, I think I would love to set up private practice, at least part-time, to treat patients in this population while also contributing to the treatment of my regular adult population as well. I'm hoping that in the near future, I'm able to do a fellowship in either reproductive psychiatry or consult liaison with a focus on reproductive psychiatry and women's mental health. And, you know, I hope that I'm able to, in some way, continue to find a way to keep teaching, because medical education is also a passion for me.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you really enjoy teaching and speaking. And I think it would be, you know, a shame not to continue on that passion of yours. I think that when you have such insight and such passion about a topic like this, I think it'd be a shame not to spread it and not to share it. And so I hope you do continue teaching. We need advocates like you in this field to, you know, spread the message, spread the awareness, you know, not just in your day-to-day, you know, interaction and practice with your patients, but also among medical professionals who are just learning and just coming across what is reproductive psychiatry and starting from page one. I think it's great to have an advocate like you, able to break things down for them and simplify things and really, really break it down to the most key components of how this really affects and impacts long-term health of women and this population. We're just about wrapping up, but I am curious, we have a lot of listeners that are mostly medical students. So I'm curious, you know, how has mentorship influenced your career for medical students now that are interested in going into a career in psychiatry and now just learning about repro-psych, or students may have been considering repro-psych? What advice would you give to them, both students and residents, about finding and engaging with mentors in this field?
Yeah, you're definitely right. Mentorship is really important. I think the first thing that students and residents can do is look into their own program, see if there are any attendings that are interested in this topic, that are familiar with this topic, and kind of engage with them to see if there are any projects that they can work on together or that sort of thing. Reaching out to alumni from your med school or your residency program that are currently practicing reproductive psychiatry is also a great option. But I recognize that, you know, this is a new and upcoming field, and, you know, trainees might not have access to mentors from their own medical school or from their program. And this is where the repro-psych trainees comes in. It's a great community where, you know, you can attend all these discussions and presentations on this topic and really just learn all of these topics from professionals that have been in this field for years, are really passionate on this topic. And they actually have a mentorship program within that trainees group. So you can actually get a mentor, get in touch with a mentor through that reproductive psychiatry trainees interest group. And so if there isn't anyone in your med school, in your residency training program that you can reach out to, I think this would be the way to go.
Yeah, that's great advice. I think that starting at your home institution and home program and seeing if there are anyone there that's willing to mentor you, or, you know, you can collaborate with on a project, and just, you know, kind of diving feet first, into a project that where you can really, you know, hands-on project where you can learn more about this field is a great idea. And then for those that don't have access to, you know, mentors in their immediate vicinity, maybe reaching out to a group like RepoPsych Trainees where they have built-in mentorship programs. I think it's great to see that this field has kind of taken off the way it has. from, you know, something I had never heard of just a few years ago to, you know, with now, you know, with conferences and textbooks and mentorship programs and several, you know, organizations, several fellowships across the country. I think it's so cool to see that growth, and even cooler to see that the community is striving to give back to trainees now and educate the next generation of mental health providers, so that they are well equipped entering their careers to, you know, really, really provide the best care to their patients. I think that that is such a great way about going about growing this field, because thereby they're growing, bringing attention to the space, also bringing more people into the space. And so I think great things are happening, and you've highlighted some great ways to get involved. And my final question for you, for myself and for listeners, you know, people interested in a career in psychiatry, and particularly the career of reproductive psychiatry, can you offer any other words of advice for us?
Sure. I feel like, you know, reproductive psychiatry, it's very interesting. For people who are thinking about a career in reproductive psychiatry, you should really attend some of these discussions, and see if this is something that you would like to do. It's very rewarding to treat this population, especially when a lot of mental health issues in this population are kind of, in a way, not given the importance that they are due. And so being that person for your patients is very rewarding. So in terms of like advice, I would just say, you know, join as many interest groups and discussions as you can. There are so many out there, and get in touch with individuals that are currently in this field. At this point, it is a developing field, and, you know, you can do a lot of self-learning. And so some of the things I feel like, I mentioned NCRP, the Reproductive Psychiatry Trainees Interest Group, then there's like MARCI of North America, right? All of these groups. And then a lot of, if you're just getting into treating your patients, there are a lot of websites that you can do your research on these topics. So for example, ReproTalks is a website that provides information on effects on pregnancy of various medications. So you can guide your patients well with using that website. Mother to Baby is great for providers as well as patients, especially if you're a primary care provider or OB-GYN just getting into, you know, oh, this patient came to me, they're on this medication, and, you know, they just got pregnant. What should I do? Should I just immediately take them off this medication? So a basic guideline is, you know, you can find it on Mother to Baby. If you are a psychiatrist and you want an opinion on one of your patients who is planning to get pregnant, there is actually a perinatal psychiatric consult line from Postpartum Support International as well, that and you can get in touch with a reproductive psychiatrist who can kind of guide you with making decisions for your pregnant and postpartum patients and lactating patients. So I think that's very interesting. There are so many resources out there, and it's such an exciting field. And if you're planning to consider it, you know, it's very fulfilling.
Yeah, it is very exciting. It sounds very, very rewarding. And I'm so happy you're encouraging the listeners to, you know, really take ownership over their own learning and, you know, be a little bit more proactive about looking for those resources. They are out there. You know, you just listed a bunch of them out. You know, there are so many resources out there for, you know, learners and even clinicians that are just getting started in this field to learn more about. And I really appreciate that you highlighted getting involved in the discussions, because the discussions are where learning happens. It's like more active rather than passive learning. And reading a textbook, going through resources is wonderful and can save lives. But I think engaging in active discussion is really where the learning happens, and also where the community building and collaboration happens. And I think that that's what we need more of in general, is community building and collaboration. And so I think any opportunity, especially in a new, developing, growing field like this, there is so much opportunity for for innovation, for community building, for all of those things. And so I really appreciate you taking the time to, you know, highlight a lot of those resources for our listeners and explain the importance of getting involved. I think that's such a powerful message. We really appreciate you being here today and taking time out of your Sunday morning to educate our listeners and teach us about the wonderful growing field of reproductive psychiatry. And we will be looking forward to seeing, you know, what you do with the, you know, in the near future with your career and your practice and everything. Very, very excited for you and the work that you're doing.
Thank you so much for having me, Arizu. This was a great conversation and an excellent start to my week.
To our audience, if you found this episode as enriching as I did, make sure to subscribe on Spotify and Apple Podcasts for more deep dives. If you have any thoughts, questions, or if there's a topic you'd like us to explore in future episodes, please reach out to us at psychsignpodcast@gmail.com. As always, a big thank you to our listeners for joining us. Until next time, take care, and we'll catch you in the next episode.